ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 16. Text number 7. Krishna Strinam Bhurorita Asto Mahishyas Tatputran Rajunarin Gunanamite. Who? Thus, having ten Putranam sons, Krishna Srinam, wives of Lord Krishna, Pura previously, Uritaha mentioned. Hasto, eight. Mahishyaha, chief queens. Tat, there. Putran, sons. Prajumna arin, headed by Prajumna. Gunami, I shall recite. Te, for you. Translation. Among Lord Krishna's wives, each of whom had 10 sons. I previously mentioned 8 principal queens. I shall now recite for you the names of those 8 queens' sons, headed by Prajumna. So, having discussed a related topic, about how Krishna was adored and loved by his queens, he now begins the Sukadeva Goswami now begins the main topic of this chapter. So he is discussing Sukadeva Goswami has mentioned that Krishna had 8 principal queens, and of those 8 principal queens he's going to tell us who are each of their sons, each of whom who had 10 sons. So Charu Deshna Sudeshnascha Charu Dehascha Bhiryavam Sucharus charu guptas cha badra charus tatapara churu chandra vicharus cha churus charas samohare prajumna pramukha jatta rukminyam havama pitu. The first son of Queen Rukmini was Prajumna, and also born of her were Charudeshna, Sudeshna, and the powerful Charudeha, along with Sucharu, Charugupta, Bhadracharu, Charuchandra, Vicharu, and Charu, the tenth. None of these sons of Lord Hari was less than his father. So these are the first 10 sons of Rukmini, and describing here that all these sons were equal in quality to their father, in qualities. As we know, Krishna was very opulent, very wealthy, very wise, very famous like this, and the sons of Krishna had were not less than the father. So then we describe the next lot of sons. Banu sabanu sva banu pranuru banu mans tata chandra banu brihad banu radibanas tata stamaha stri banu pradibanus cha satchabamatma jadasa samba sambaha samitra puru chit chata jit cha sahasrijit vijayas chitra kituscha anhasamandra vidakatu Jambavacya sutta hyette sambodhya pitta samataha. The ten sons of Satchabhama were Banu, Subanu, Svabanu, Prabhanu, Banuman, Chandrabanu, Brihadbanu, Atibanu, the eighth, Sribanu, and Patibanu. Samba, Sumitra, Purujit, Satrajit, Sahasrajit, Vijaya, Chitraketi, Vasaman, Dravida, and Pratu were the sons of Jambavati. These ten, headed by Samba, were their father's favourites. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami translates the compound Pitra Samataha in this verse as highly regarded by their father. The word also indicates that these sons, like the others already mentioned, were regarded as being just like their glorious father, Lord Krishna. So, you know, they were among these sons, we mentioned Samba. These sons, of course, were very dear to Krishna, the ten sons of Jambavati, and among them, Samba was very dear to Krishna. Samba was an incarnation of who? Kartikeya. Actually, we read in chapter 55 how Kamadev, the demigod, being burned up by the curse of Lord Shiva, entered within the body of Krishna and later took birth by entering within the form of Pradyumna, who's actually Pradyumna of the Chaturvyuha, one of the expansions of Krishna. So we have Krishna expands as Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram expands as Vasudeva, Sankarsan, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. Each of these incarnations, each of these expansions is equal, non-different from the Lord. They are equal in all respects. So Pradyumna is actually an expansion of Krishna, and yet generally we know him as Kamadev. And actually many Nityasiddha devotees appeared within the family of Krishna and amongst the Yadus, but they, some of them descended from, also many of the demigods appeared within the families of the Yadus. And those demigods sometimes appeared, combined together along with a Nityasiddha. And though sometimes we know that particular person as that previous demigod. So for instance here we say Samba was previously Kartikeya. But also, we may know that many of these relatives of Krishna are Nityasiddha devotees. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the reason that the Nityasiddha devotees don't descend and expand their own glories is because they're expanding the glories of Krishna. So they appear like that as representing one of Krishna's vibhutis or special potencies. So as you know, in the Bhagavad Gita it describes a Kamadev is a special vibhuti or, you know, opulence of Krishna. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that among procreators, I am Kamadev, you know, the god of love. But that, and you know, among generals, I am Kartikeya. I think it's also called Skanda. So, in this way, the various Nitya Siddhas are also appearing there, but they sometimes are known as, through their opulence, as you know, as being one of Krishna's opulences. So they're expanding Krishna's glories rather than their own. we'll read the next 10 sons. Viras Chandra Sasenas Cha Chitra Govega Vandrisha Hama Sankurva Shushiman Kuntira Nagna Jite Sute Sutta. The sons of Nagna Jiti were Vira, Chandra, Ashvasen, Chitragu, Vegavan, Brisha, Amma, Sanku, Vasu, and the opulent Kunti. So among them, Kunti was very powerful. Shruti Karavi Brisho Bira Subahu Badrahi Kala Santhir Dhashaha Punam Masaha Kalinja Samokavara. Shruta Kavi Vrisha Vira Subahu Badra Santi Dasha and Purnamasa were sons of Kalindi. Her youngest son was Somaka. Pragosha Katravan Simha Bala Prabala Urdaga Madreya Putra Mahasakti Saha Ojo Parajitaha. Madra's sons were Pragosh, Katravan, Simha, Bala, Prabala, Udaga, Mahasakti, Saha, Oja, and Aparajit. Purport. Madra is also known as Lakshman. So these were the sons of Lakshmana, who is also known as Madra. Brikha harsha nilo gridha bhara bhara nonnara evacha mahamsa pavano bhanir mitravinda majakshudi. Mitravinda's sons were Brikha, Harsha, Anila, Gridra, Varana, Unara, Mahamsa, Pavana, Vani, and Kshudi. Sangrama Jhir Brihat Sena Surya Prahara Norijit Jasavadra Bhadraya Vamayuscha Satchaka. Sangrama Jhir Brihat Sena Surya Praharana Arijit Jaya and Subhadra were the sons of Bhadra together with Vama, Ayur and Satchaka. Deepti Mams Atambrapta Tadhya Rohinyas Atanaya Hare Prad Yumnach Chanirudho Bud Rukmavacham Mahabalaha Putram Tu Rukmino Rajan Namna Bojakate Pure. Deepti Man Tamratapta and others were the sons of Lord Krishna and Rohini. Lord Krishna's son, Pajumna, fathered the greatly powerful Aniruddha in the womb of Rukmavati, the daughter of Rukmi. O King, this took place while they were living in the city of Bodhikata. Purport. Lord Krishna's eight principal queens are Rukmini, Satyabhama, Chambavati, Nadnijiti, Kalindi, Lakshmana, Mitravinda and Bhadra. Having mentioned all their sons, Sukadeva Goswami now refers to the sons of the other 16,100 queens by mentioning the two principal sons of Queen Rohini, the foremost and the, of the remaining queens. So, all of the other 16,100 queens, they also had 10 sons each. And of course, those queens were headed up by Rohini. Not the same as Balaram's mother, of course. And the last verse that I will read, text number 19. Eta shamputra putras cha babuvaha kadishan ripa matara krishna jatinam sahasrani cha sodasa. My dear king, the sons and grandsons of Lord Krishna's children numbered in the tens of millions. 16,000 mothers gave rise to this dynasty. So here Sukadeva Goswami mentions that 16,108 mothers gave rise to this dynasty. So although the mothers are counted, can be counted, but factually it's not really possible to count the dynasty itself. So as we see, 16,108 wives, each had 10 sons. They also, as we hear later, they also had one daughter each. And all of those sons had 10 sons. And they also had many sons and daughters. So counting Krishna's, you know, family, his wives, their children, their children, their children, sons and daughters. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book that it was nearly 1 billion. Right? So, to get a grasp of that, I think there are 6 billion people on the planet at the moment. Not quite.
7 billion.
6 billion. Yeah, okay.
Just recently, they did it. Historically, that's only been that since the discovery of oil. The population of planets increased 6 times since the discovery of oil.
Right.
So prior to, say, 1860, it would probably be more like a billion. That would be the total population.
That's 6 billion now, yeah.
Yeah. But they say that since the discovery of oil,
going.
Since 1860,
the population's now. I see what you're saying, yeah. So that means that, you know, in Krishna's time, from, you know, say, if there were this many people on the planet there is now, one in every 6 people you meet would have actually been, you know, one of Krishna's family. And of course, you know, when you consider that all those family members, they all had their friends, and, you know, some of them had armies, and they all had, you know, cows, and, you know, it's just unbelievable. Well, I mean, it's believable, but it's inconceivable is probably a better word for it. I mean, it's believable because what would you expect from God, you know? Sometimes, you know, people find it difficult to believe in certain religions because, you know, they say, you know, Jesus walked on water, or, you know, there was some, one or two, you know, a couple of little miracles here and there, not a lot. And, you know, most people these days find that very difficult, but, you know, they've got no hope of tackling the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, when they hear about Krishna's, you know, if God is unlimited and inconceivable, you wouldn't expect any less, would you? You know, it's so, you know, nearly a billion family members here. So here we're talking, you know, discussing Krishna's children. So now, when you also consider what is more inconceivable, is that each out of these 1 billion family members, you know, you could pretty much write a Srimad Bhagavatam about each and every one of them. It just, you know, because they were, all the sons were equal to Krishna in, you know, qualities, prowess. Their pastimes are, you know, So you'd have to expand, you know, we have Srimad Bhagavatam, which, you know, in a lifetime we can barely, you know, get a grasp on just what Krishna actually did. Now you multiply that by a billion, you know, what was all his children doing, at the, you know, at the time. So actually, just to give you an idea, I was going to read a pastime about Pradyumna today. So we can understand, okay, we're going to talk about the pastimes, just one pastime of one of his children, and expand that by a billion. You just get an idea of how expansive Krishna's pastimes were even on this planet. So, at about this time, a little bit of chronology. There's, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam is not fully chronologically sequenced, but some parts are, you know, obviously. And so Krishna is obviously married, you know, Rukmini and the other seven of the eight principal wives, and then he's married 16,108 wives. As we will hear later in this chapter, Pradyumna, who was married to Mayavati from birth, he also marries Rukmavati, and from the combination of Pradyumna and Rukmavati comes his son Aniruddha, who also has so many different pastimes. And then, you know, we hear about the wedding of Aniruddha and how, you know, there was a big fight with Banasura over that. And we also hear about, you know, a little bit of a pastime that happened with Krishna's children when they stumbled upon the well, Sambha and some of Krishna's sons, and they found the lizard in there, and they eventually rescued King Riga. And then in chapter 65 we get to the part where Lord Balaram visits Vrindavan. Now somewhere in between there, between here and you know, that past time, at around that time it was proposed that Ugrasena perform a Rajasuya sacrifice. And when that was suggested, it was said that Pradyumna should travel the world and conquer all the kings and extract revenue, taxes, so that they would be able to perform this Rajasuya sacrifice. Generally, excuse me, I've just gotten over the flu, so her voice is not too good, but generally a Rajasuya sacrifice, you release a horse, has a little message on it. It's a very, you know, special horse. It runs all over the world, and when it runs into someone's kingdom, then, you know, it has a message on: if you don't, you know, subjugate yourself to King Ugrasena and pay some revenue, you know, that he is the emperor of the world, then we will come and there'll be a fight. So better just pay up. Okay. So, and then, you know, when the horse has travelled all around the world, they have 1 year or so to do that, and when their horse returns back, and all the kings of the world have agreed, right, because you can't perform the jagya until all the kings of the world have accepted that yes, you are, you know, that so and so is the emperor of the whole world, and, you know, you've extracted all the revenue and necessary to perform that, then you can perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, and there's massive, massive benefits for the entire world. It's so very, very purifying. It is not an ego sort of thing, but if you can perform these Rajasuya sacrifices, they purify the entire world of, you know, mountains and mountains of reactions to any impious activities, and thus everyone becomes peaceful, happy, the whole world flourishes, you know, there is opulence and peace like this. So, you know, it is very, very important, but very, very rarely achieved. So, I'll actually read from this Garga Samhita. I don't know the story off by heart. I read this Garga Samhita, of course. Has anyone read Garga Samhita? This is by Garga Muni. Oh, this is by. Who we got here? Translated by Kusha Krath Das and edited by Purna Pragya Das. Yeah. The Garga Samhita. When it was spoken by Sudha Goswami to Sanaka Rishi, and Sudha Goswami had heard it from Narada Muni, and later Narada Muni also spoke it to Garga Muni, and that's how it came to be the Garga Samhita. After Sudha had heard it and had spoken it to Sanaka Rishi, Lord Shiva actually spoke it to Parvati, and Lord Shiva explained, you know, where it originally came from. He was saying that originally Krishna spoke some pastimes to Srimati Radharani, and then explained those same pastimes to Lord Sesha. Lord Sesha spoke those pastimes to Dharma, and Dharma spoke those same pastimes of Krishna to his sons Naranarayan Rishi, and Naranarayan Rishi spoke it to Narada Muni, and Narada Muni then spoke it to Garga Muni. And so Narada Muni told Garga Muni, he said, previously I have described you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam to Vyasadeva and the pastimes of Krishna, and he said, but I want you to elaborate on some of those pastimes in the in this Garga Samhita. So this was compiled after the Srimad Bhagavatam, just to, you know, Narada Muni wanted there to be some little extra detail. Some of these pastimes, of course, as described before, you know, many of the different Nityasiddha devotees and expansions of Krishna, when they appear in Krishna's pastimes, they appear in such a way as to glorify Krishna, that they appear to, you know, to promote the realization that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I am appearing as his expansion. Or, you know, Nityasiddhas may appear and, you know, manifest that I am appearing as one of Krishna's opulences, you know, like that. So, therefore, so as not to detract from the main theme of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, some stories may be, you know, told later. So now, you know, in order to, you know, hear the glories of Pradyumna, which may be, you know, a bit of a sidetrack from glorifying Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore there's a separate book, but it's very important to understand them, because if you want to fully understand the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not nice to know a little bit of the background of what's actually happening as well. So anyway, Garga Muni said to Narada Muni said to Garga Muni that if you should speak this in the form of me telling the story to King Bahulashva. And he described that, you know, by hearing this Garga Samhita, it grants all wealth, great opulence to a person, wonderful children, sons, daughters, and also by hearing it, one can actually go back to Goloka Vrindavan. So, you know, very wonderful benediction by hearing this. And But he said that if someone is faithless, has no faith in the Guru, no faith in the Vedic scriptures, no faith in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if they don't live the life of a Vaishnava, you know, if they're sinful, they can hear Garga Samhita and they won't get a benefit. I don't. So anyway, to illustrate, remember that Lord Shiva is also speaking to Parvati, and he's explaining to her a story that King Pratibahu, he was the son of Vajra, who was the great-grandson of Krishna. And he was ruling Mathura as long after Krishna's disappearance. And he didn't have a son, and he performed, you know, because he wanted to, especially the kings, they want to keep the dynasty going. He performed many, many vows in order to get a son, but didn't, you know, couldn't get a son. So, at that, he was lamenting, he was very morose, and this sage, Sandilya, he came through and he said, if you hear this Garga Samhita, it will fulfill all your desires, including, you know, to have a son. So, and he said, you can hear, you know, this scripture any time, any place, anywhere. There are no rules and regulations here in this scripture. So, King Pratibahu, they sat down on the banks of the Jamuna there in Mathura, and he heard from Sandilya Muni the Garga Samhita, and while they were actually reciting it, Lord Krishna, Radha and Krishna actually appeared. And when Radha and Krishna appeared, everyone there in Vrindavan, Mathura, they you know, bowed down to Krishna and started praying that he would grant them pure love of God at this. And Krishna said, yes, by hearing this Garga Samhita, all your aspirations and what you have prayed for, they will be fulfilled. And then, so Krishna benedicted them, and then Radha and Krishna disappeared. And after that, after hearing the Garga Samhita, then Pratibahu, distributed heaps of you know, wealth to Sandilya, the priest, for reading it, because one should always remunerate the priest. And then Sandilya Muni, he got that wealth, of course, and then he distributed to all the, you know, Mathura Vasis, like that. So one should always remunerate the priest, but the priest shouldn't be greedy. They then take that wealth and, you know, use it in Krishna consciousness. So, and then after that, Pratibahu gave birth to a son called Subahu. So then he was very happy. So this is, you know, so very powerful, very, just to hear these pastimes of Garga Samhita is very purifying, and, you know, awards the fulfills all one's aspirations if one is a Vaishnava. So I read this. This is about Pradyumna's traveling the world to conquer the world. King Bahulashva said, O Narada, how did Lord Krishna help King Ugrasena to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice? Kindly tell me about this. Sri Narada Muni said, once in the Siddharma assembly house, Ugrasena heard about the glories of the Rajasuya sacrifice from me, and so he asked Lord Krishna if he could perform it. Lord Krishna then said, O King of the Yadavas, this is a very good idea. By performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, your fame will spread throughout the three worlds. Call the Yadavas and let us begin necessary preparations. Narada Muni said, thereafter, King Ugrasena summoned all subordinate rulers. A betel nut was placed in the Siddharma assembly house, and it was announced that any king who could conquer all the rulers of Jambadvip, that's the whole earth, could pick up that betel nut. However, after hearing these words of King Ugrasena, everyone kept quiet. Then Pradyumna, son of Rukmini, stood up, picked up the betel nut, offered respects to King Ugrasena, and then spoke. Pradyumna said, "I will conquer all the kings of Jambadvip and accept tribute from them for performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. After doing so, I shall return home. If I do not return victorious, let me accept the sins of killing a brahmana, having intimate relations with a rejected woman, and killing the embryo within the womb." Narada Muni said, upon hearing these words, all of the Yadavas greatly praised Pradyumna. King Ugrasena then called for his priest Garga Muni for guidance, while Pradyumna went for a ritualistic bath. Thereafter, King Ugrasena put tilak on Pradyumna's forehead, while the Yadavas presented him with many gifts and offered an offerings of respect. Ugrasena then gave Pradyumna a sword, and Baladev gave him a kavacha. Lord Krishna gave his son the Saranga bow and two inexhaustible quivers. Elderly Shurashen offered Pradyumna divine ornaments and a crown. Vasudev gave him a shield with 100 moons, and Uddhava gave him a celestial garland of lotus flowers. Akrura gave Pradyumna the Dakshinavarta conch shell that bestows victory, while Garga Muni gave him the Krishna Kavacha. At that time, Indra and the other Lokapalas arrived there, as did Brahma, Shiva, and many great sages. Shiva gave Pradyumna a trident that shone like fire, while Brahma gave him a turban decorated with rubies. Varuna gave Pradyumna nooses, and Yamaraj gave him the Kaladanda. Surya gave Pradyumna a gigantic club, and Kuvera presented him with a garland of gems. The moon god presented the Chandrakanta gem to Pradyumna, while Agni gave him a spear. The earth gave Pradyumna divine sandals, and Indra presented him with the bejeweled chariot that had been built by Vishvakarma and was drawn by 1,000 horses. At this time there was a great din of music, the blowing of conch shells and the recitation of Vedic hymns by the Brahmanas. Flowers were showered upon Pradyumna by the denizens of heaven. Narada Muni said, "O King of Mithila, after bowing down to Krishna, Baladev, Ugrasena and his priest Garga Muni, Pradyumna mounted his chariot and came out from the city. He was followed by Uddhava and many warriors of the Yadava, Bhoja, Andaka, Daharsh, Dasaha and Maru dynasties. Thus there were innumerable soldiers of the four divisions, foot soldiers, horse soldiers, chariot warriors, and warriors riding upon elephants. Some of the elephants were of the Airavata breed, having four tusks, while others had three. While observing this magnificent army, even the demigods in heaven were amazed. King Ugrasena then addressed Pradyumna, wishing his speedy return after victory over all the kings of the world. Krishna and Baladev then returned to Dwarka. King Bahulashva said, "O best of sages, which countries were visited by Pradyumna and his vast armies? Simply by hearing the activities of the great devotees who have received Lord Krishna's mercy, one becomes purified." Narada Muni said, "After mounting the chariot of King Indra, Pradyumna first went to the country of Kacha to conquer it. The king of Kacha was named Subra. At the time of Pradyumna's arrival, the king was engaged in hunting. After receiving the news, he hurried back to his capital. Then, taking many decorated elephants and horses with him, Subra went and bowed down before Pradyumna while paying the tribute." So there was no problems there. Next, Pradyumna went to the kingdom of Kalinga. He's expecting a few problems. The Kalinga, we hear a little bit more about King of Kalinga in this chapter. So, yeah. He had his teeth punched out, right? By Balaram. The Kalinga king came to fight with the Yadavas along with his vast army. When Aniruddha inflicted heavy losses upon his army, so of course at this stage Aniruddha is born, the king of Kalinga personally entered the battlefield mounted upon an elephant. Immediately he threw a great club at Aniruddha, making him fall onto the ground. At this, Gada, the younger brother of Baladev, picked up his club and struck the Kalinga's king's great elephant. So as mentioned here, Gada, the younger brother of Baladev, and sometimes Krishna is also called Gada, Graja, or the elder brother of Gada. Because actually, Rohini, as well as giving birth to Balaram, she also gave birth to Gada, that was his younger brother. But, that would have been Krishna's maternal, that Gada therefore would have been Krishna's maternal cousin. But there was another Gada, Vasudev. He had many wives, one of which was Rohini, but another one, forget her name, but she also had a son called Gada. Therefore, that would have been, both Krishna and Balaram's maternal cousin, brother like that. So they call cousins brothers. So you can actually call Krishna or Balaram Gada Graja, because they both have a younger brother or maternal cousin called Gada. A little side note there. So, when the Kalinga king fell from his elephant, he picked up a club to combat Gada. As their club struck, issuing forth sparks, they soon became broken, and so the two great heroes fought hand to hand. Soon Gada managed to throw the king of Kalinga to the ground and drag him, like Garuda dragging a great snake. At last, being severely wounded, the Kalinga king approached Pradyumna, taking shelter of him and presenting him innumerable presents of incomparable value. Next, Pradyumna and the Yadava army went to the desert country ruled by King Gaya. First, Uddhava went to the king's court and explained how Ugrasena desired to perform a Rajasuya sacrifice, and for that purpose, Pradyumna had come to extract tribute. After hearing this, King Gaya, who was intoxicated with pride in his prowess, replied to Uddhava saying, "I would never offer tribute to the Yadavas who have only recently come into power." Thus Uddhava returned to Pradyumna and informed him of the king's words. Thereafter a fierce battle ensued between the Yadavas and the army of King Gaya. After his army fled from the fierce attack of the Yadavas, King Gaya personally entered the battlefield. Soon, Diptiman was able to wound King Gaya and then bring him before Pradyumna. Upon regaining consciousness, the king greatly praised Pradyumna and gladly offered him sufficient tribute. Thereafter, Pradyumna and the Yadavas approached the kingdom of Avantipur, ruled by King Jayasena. The Avanti king voluntarily approached Pradyumna and paid his tribute. Thereafter, Pradyumna met Vinda and Anuvinda and then departed for Mahismati on the banks of the Narmada River. Indranila, the king of Mahismati, sent a messenger to Pradyumna. The messenger said, "Duryodhana had crowned Indranila the king here, and as such, he cannot offer tribute to anyone else." Pradyumna then gave the message his reply, saying that perhaps Indranila had not heard of King Ugrasena, and that it behooved him to pay his tribute as others had done. Thereafter, King Indranila wisely came and offered a vast amount of wealth to Pradyumna. Next, Pradyumna conquered King Risha of the Gujarat province. After receiving much wealth from him, he next journeyed to the kingdom of the Chedis. The king of the Chedis, Damagosha, was the husband of Vasudeva's sister. His son was Sisipal, the avowed enemy of Krishna. Uddhava approached Damagosha and requested him to pay tribute for the performance of Ukrasena's Rajasuya sacrifice. Sisipal was present at that time, and upon hearing this he became enraged so that his lips were trembling. He said, "The ways of the world are indeed strange." There's a few editing mistakes here. He's saying that, "I may ask Lord Brahma, are you the progenitor or am I? Long ago, being cursed by Yayati, the Yadavas had been vanquished. Now, after getting a small kingdom, they want to rule the earth. Krishna had installed Ugrasena upon the throne by force. He does not feel shamed. Vasudeva is of a fair complexion, and so how could a black son be born of him? This is indeed quite shameful. After conquering Pradyumna, I will go to Dwarka and rid the world of the Yadavas." So, you know, you can see that he's really looking for trouble here, isn't he? That's pretty nasty stuff. After saying this, Sisipal was about to proceed onto the battlefield, but then Damagosha restrained him. No wonder Krishna killed him. Yeah, later on. After hearing his father's words of conciliation, Sisipal remained silent. The queen, Vasudeva's sister, Shrutisrava, then came there and confirmed that she didn't want there to be a conflict between the Chedis and the Yadavas. Citing that Krishna was Sisipal's cousin brother, she said that his son Pradyumna should be welcomed. In reply, however, Sisipal argued with his mother, saying that Krishna was his enemy, having obstructed his marriage to Rukmini. Sisipal said, "If you take the side of my enemies, then I will bind you and my father with rope and throw you both in jail. If this could not be done, I will gladly kill you both." Narada Muni continued, "After hearing these harsh words of their son, Damagosha and his queen remained silent. Uddhava then returned and explained what had happened to the Yadavas. After humiliating his parents in this way, Sisipal came out of the city with his vast army. In the fierce conflict that ensued between the Yadavas and Sisipal and his friends, Akrura fought with Juman. When Akrura was hit by Juman's mighty club, Satyaki came and severed his head with an arrow. Another friend of Sisipal, Sakta, encountered Satyaki, but when Kritavam killed him after picking up and throwing him a distance of 8 miles. Pradyumna's brother, Banu, then confronted 2 more of Sisipal's associates named Ranga and Pinga. With a sword that was given to him by Krishna, Banu cut the 2 to pieces. Upon receiving the news that Ranga and Pinga had been slain, Sisipal became enraged and mounted his chariot. In the battle that ensued, Sisipal released the Brahmastra that had been given to him by Dattatreya. However, Pradyumna neutralized that weapon with his own Brahmastra. Next, Sisipal released the Angararastra given to him by Parashuram and Mount Mahendra. When this weapon also was foiled by Pradyumna, Sisipal next released the Gajastra awarded to him by Agastya Muni at the Malaya Hills. From this weapon issued forth a stream of huge elephants that proceeded to destroy the army of the Yadavas. To counteract this weapon, Pradyumna invoked the Narasimha Astra, producing innumerable half-man, half-lion creatures that devoured the elephants. Finally, Sisipal picked up his sword and shield, got down from his chariot and pounced on Pradyumna, as a firefly might pounce upon a lamp. With his Yamadanda, Pradyumna reduced Sisipal's sword and shield to ashes and then bound him with the nooses of Aruna. Then, when Prajumna raised his sword to kill Sisupal, Gada intervened and restrained him, saying, "He will be delivered by Krishna. That is the prediction of the demigods. You should not make their words false." King Damagosha then arrived upon the scene and presented lavish tribute to the Yadavas. Indeed, the king embraced Prajumna, begging him to forgive his son. Thus all was settled, and the Yadavas continued their conquest. When they came to the country of Konkana, the Yadavas were greeted by the king, Maitavi, who challenged Prajumna to a duel with a club. Prajumna tried to dissuade the proud king, who replied, "If one of you passes under my legs, then I will desist from fighting." Prajumna was pained to hear these derisive words, but Gada, the younger brother of Balaram, stepped forward, wielding his club. Very soon Maitavi lay upon the ground, blood coming from his mouth, and in this condition he refused to fight further. After bowing down before Prajumna, Maitavi said, "I acted in this way just to test your strength. You are the perfect king and I am a sinful man. Kindly excuse my offences." Thereafter the Yadus departed, and in the following days they passed through many lands, subduing the rulers of those places and extracting tribute from them. While roaming with his army, Prajumna also visited the ashrams of many great sages. In the course of their travels, the Yadavas came to the kingdom of Kurusha, which was ruled by Brihadasarma, whose wife Srutadev, a sister of Vasudev. The son of Dantavakra, their son was Dantavakra, an avowed enemy of Krishna. Like Sisupal, he became enraged and decided to fight with Prajumna. Being a servant of the demons, against the advice of his parents, Dantavakra said, "I will kill all of the Yadavas." Carrying a great club, Dantavakra, whose complexion was as black as coal, marched alone against the Yadavas. His appearance was terrible. He was as tall as 10 tala trees. As he walked, the earth shook as he uprooted trees and mountains. As Dantavakra approached, the Yadavas became terrified. In the fighting that ensued, Dantavakra picked up elephants and threw them hundreds of miles, as if they were swabs of cotton being carried by a strong wind. He threw the horses, charioteers and chariots into the sky, so that many soldiers fell on their heads while vomiting blood. The 18 valorous sons of Krishna then attacked Dantavakra, but he hardly cared for their blows. Then Balaram, Kritavarma, Akrura, Satyaki and others attacked the demon. Samba then attacked Dantavakra, who threw him onto the ground. Samba got up and threw Dantavakra down. Prajumna then entered the fray, and upon seeing him, Dantavakra hurled many insulting words at him. Prajumna countered all these insults and then attacked Dantavakra. Dantavakra, with his mighty club, smashed Prajumna's chariot to pieces, making the 1,000 horses flee in fear. Prajumna picked up his club, and thereafter a fierce duel ensued. Dantavakra picked up Prajumna and threw him onto the ground. Prajumna quickly got up and then picked up Dantavakra and violently flung him onto the ground, causing blood to come from his mouth as he lost consciousness, his bones broken. At this time, Brihadasarma, the king of Kurusha, and his queen Srutadev appeared on the scene and made peace with Prajumna. Thereafter, they returned to their city, along with Dantavakra and Prajumna and the Yadavas continued their conquest. When the Yadavas reached Kundinapura in the kingdom of Vidarbha, King Bhishmaka welcomed them and offered enormous riches. Prajumna bowed down with reverence before his maternal grandfather and then continued on. At the Malaya mountain, Prajumna saw the great sage Agastya, who formerly had drunk the ocean. After worshipping the sage, Prajumna engaged in discussions with him for furthering his advancement in knowledge. Thereafter, the Yadavas went to Rajapura, which was ruled over by Salva. I, Narada, informed Salva of Pradyumna's arrival, and he went to inform Vivida, the monkey king. Becoming enraged that his friend Salva was under attack, Dvivida approached the Yadavas and started creating a great disturbance. Then, seeing Pradyumna approach, Dvivida leapt onto his chariot and began shaking it. Pradyumna dragged Dvivida from his chariot with the tip of his bow. This further inflamed Dvivida's anger, and he struck Pradyumna with his fist. Pradyumna then pierced Dvivida with an arrow that carried him all the way to Lanka. Pradyumna then contended with Salva, easily defeating him. Meanwhile, as Dvivida returned to the mainland, Pradyumna continued his conquest, conquering many lands, and then arrived at Setubandha. While gazing at the 100 yojana expanse of ocean, he halted. So this is Pradyumna. He's arrived at the ocean. So Setubandha, that's what, way down south, is it? What's that? Yeah. Pradyumna then asked Uddhava whether Vibhishan would not offer him tribute. Pradyumna then sent a message to Vibhishan saying that he should pay tribute for King Ugrasena's Rajasuya sacrifice. If not, then he would build a bridge to Lanka with his arrows and come to Lanka to fight. Pradyumna tied this message to an arrow and shot it into the royal court of Vibhishan, lighting up the four directions. Being very surprised, Vibhishan inquired from Sukracharya about the strength of the Yadavas. In reply, Sukracharya narrated an ancient history. Long ago, the four Kumaras, the sons of Brahma, arrived in Vaikuntha. Considering them to be mere children, the gatekeepers, Jaya and Vijaya, prevented them from entering. At this, the Kumaras became enraged and cursed the gatekeepers to become demons for three births. Thus, the two fell from Vaikuntha and became the sons of Diti. The older was Hiranyaksha and the younger Hiranyakasipu. They were killed by Lord Varaha and Lord Narasimha, respectively. Next, they became the sons of Vishrava and Kashini, named Ravana and Kumbhakarn, who were killed by Lord Ram. These same two have now appeared as Sisipal and Dantavakra, and Lord Krishna has incarnated to kill them. In this way, Sukracharya explained to Vibhishan how Pradyumna had now come to collect tribute so that King Ugrasena could perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, and that the arrow had been shot by him. Vibhishan considered Krishna to be an incarnation of Lord Ram, and so he went to Pradyumna and offered lavish tribute, as well as nice prayers. In return, Pradyumna, being very pleased with Vibhishan, gave him many presents that he had received from the demigods before setting out on his conquest. Vibhishan then happily returned to Lanka. Pradyumna and the Yadavas continued on, and one day, while at their camp, a naked Avaduta was seen rapidly approaching, followed by laughing children. So an Avaduta, of course, is a saintly person who appears a little crazy, but they're not. Pradyumna asked Uddhava about the Avaduta, and so he replied, "He is a Paramahamsa, Lord Dattatreya, an empowered incarnation of Lord Vishnu." Pradyumna then went to Dattatreya and, after bowing down to him, offered him a nice seat. In response to Pradyumna's inquiries, Dattatreya spoke at great length about transcendental knowledge of the Absolute Truth. Thereafter, the Yadus toured many places in South India, extracting tribute from numerous kings. Finally, they arrived at Mount Mahendra, the abode of Lord Parasuram. Pradyumna offered his obeisances to Parasuram and circumambulated him. And being pleased, the son of Jamadagni offered the Yadavas all hospitality. All varieties of food were supplied to the Yadavas, created by Parasaram with his mystic power. All of the Yadavas became highly astonished upon witnessing this display. Prajumna took the opportunity to inquire from Parasaram about transcendental understanding, and they engaged in a very friendly discussion. After continuing their tour, the Yadavas came to the kingdom of Mithila, where the descendant of Janaka named Driti was king. This Driti was the father of King Bahulashva, and he was a great devotee of Lord Krishna. Uddhava informed Prajumna that Krishna would come to meet Bahulashva in the future. After hearing this, Prajumna disguised himself as a Brahmana and made Uddhava his disciple and approached King Driti. Their motive was to test the devotion of the king. After entering the city, Prajumna was surprised to see how all the warriors were adorned with tilak on their foreheads and had chanting beads in their hands, reciting the holy names of the Lord Krishna. Indeed, the name of Krishna was inscribed on all the doors and his picture was painted at many places. All the walls in the city were decorated with pictures of clubs, conches, lotuses and chakras, as well as pictures of the 10 incarnations of Lord Vishnu. There was a nice temple for Tulasi in front of each residence. As Prajumna and Uddhava walked through the streets, in the by lanes, they saw someone listening to the Mahabharata or Bhagavatam. Then, at other places, they could see people reciting the various Puranas as well as the Harivamsa. In many places, there were recitations of Valmiki's Ramayana. Elsewhere, Brahmanas were seen performing Jagyas. In the temples, Kirtan was being performed with the accompaniment of musical instruments. Indeed, in each and every house, people were seen to be engaged in the 9 types of devotional service to the Lord. When Prajumna and Uddhava entered the palace courtyard, they saw great sages such as Sukadeva, Vedavyasa, Narada, Gautama, Brihaspati and Vasistha present there. Upon seeing the arrival of the Brahmana and his disciple, Prajumna and Uddhava, the king stood up at once to greet them. With folded hands, the descendant of Janaka said, "Today my life has become successful. I have become purified. With your arrival, all of the demigods and sages have become pleased. Great personalities like yourself wander over the earth just to benefit householders like me." In response, Prajumna praised the citizens' devotion for Lord Krishna. King Janaka said, "This city, the people, and this place do not belong to me. My wife, my children, and everything else belongs to Lord Krishna. Whatever work I perform with my body, mind, and speech, I offer to the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna." Prajumna, in the disguise of a Brahmana, said, "O King, you will certainly attain the liberation of becoming one with the Lord." The king replied, "I do not want to achieve such liberation in the Supreme. I simply consider myself to be the eternal servant of the Lord and his devotees." The Brahmana said, that Brahmana, of course, is Prajumna, "You display all the symptoms of an unalloyed devotee of the Lord. I am surprised that Prajumna, who is on a tour of the world, has not yet appeared here." King Driti, his voice choked with tears, replied, "Prajumna is all-pervading, being an expansion of the Lord himself. Of course he is here." The Brahmana said, "If you are sure that Prajumna is all-pervading, then make him appear here just as Prahlad caused the appearance of Lord Nrsimhadeva." The king said, "If I have actually performed devotional service to the Lord, if I have actually selflessly served the Lord's devotees, then it is my prayer that he now appear before me." Narada Muni said, "Giving up his disguise as a Brahmana, Prajumna appeared before the king in his actual form." Observing this miraculous transformation, the king became overwhelmed by ecstatic love for the Lord. After the king offered numerous words of gratitude, Prajumna informed him that he had appeared in this way just to test his devotion and assured him that he would achieve Sarupya Mukti at the end of his life. Thereafter, Prajumna returned to his camp. So I'll skip forward because we've run out of time, but if anyone wants, I'll tell you, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. So there's another 20 pages. There's this adventure just goes on and on. They just travel the entire world, all the universe. They meet everybody. Anyway, I'll just read the last paragraph so at least you know how it finishes. The last part. Okay. Thereafter, when the Yadavas entered Dwarka, Krishna, Balaram, Ugrasena and others came to welcome them. Prajumna bowed down before King Ugrasena and then to Krishna and Balaram and finally to the sage Gaga. Every house in Dwarka then took part in a grand celebration. Narada Muni said, O King, in this way I have described all that you have asked me. What more do you want to hear about? King Bahulashva said, O sage, I would like you to tell me how King Ugrasena performed the Rajasuya sacrifice. Narada Muni said, after Gaga Muni fixed an auspicious date, with the help of Lord Krishna, King Ugrasena began to arrange for the performance of the Rajasuya sacrifice. Invitations were sent and all the great sages and brahmanas converged upon Dwarka to take part in this most grand event. Vedavyas, Sukadev, Parasara, Maitreya, Paila, Sumanta, Durvasa, Vaisopayan, Jaimini, Parasuram, Dadatreya, Asita, Angira, Vamanadev, Atri, Vasista, Kanva, Vishwamritra, Priyadvaj, Gautama, Kapila, Sanaka, Patanjali, Dronacharya, Kripacharya, and many others attended along with their disciples. Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and a host of other demigods also arrived. Bali Maharaj, along with innumerable Daityas and Danavas, also came to witness the Rajasuya sacrifice of King Ugrasena, as did Jambavan, along with numerous associates, Garuda and Vasuki, along with other Nagas. The seven oceans appeared in personified form. From Vrindavan came Giriraj Govardhan, Jasoda and Radha, along with many millions of gopis. Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana, the personality of Kali, Bhishma, Karna and the Pandavas all attended. Who could count all those who came to take part in King Ugrasena's Rajasuya sacrifice? The Rajasuya sacrifice was performed at Ravata Mountain. Gargacharya was the chief priest at that grand sacrifice. The Lord of Sacrifice, Lord Krishna, was present along with his sons. A stream of ghee as thick as the trunk of an elephant was offered into the sacrificial fire. Because of this agni, the fire god began to suffer from indigestion. All the demigods also suffered from indigestion after consuming a huge quantity of soma juice. At the conclusion of the sacrifice, King Ugrasena took his ceremonial bath along with his queen Ruchimati. A vast amount of charity was given away so that the brahmanas departed in a most satisfied state of mind. The demigods had received their shares of the sacrificial offerings and they returned to heaven in a very pleasing mood. The demons, nagas and animals also departed, being fully satisfied. In this way, everything was accomplished by the grace of the Purna Purush Lord Krishna, who had appeared in the dynasty of the Yadavas just to deliver the earth from her terrible burden. So that's a little bit. We read about maybe a quarter there of the pastimes of Prajumna traversing the whole world and many parts of the universe, visiting practically every important personality and extracting tribute for King Ugrasena's Rajasuya sacrifice, which was actually performed at about this stage of the Bhagavatam. And as we described before, by hearing about one son, so as Krishna's family members expand to about 1 billion, and we just heard just a little bit, we couldn't even get, you know, one story in, you know, of one son, so we can expand that a billion times, just what Krishna's family did, it is just inconceivable. So, any questions or comments at all? Who did they throw 8 miles?
What is what?
What's that? Yes, I forget who it was. He shot him with an arrow, right? And so we just read a part of that past time. That pastime we just read, after Pradyumna got married, after he had Aniruddha, because Aniruddha actually accompanies him on this journey, and then Gargamuni then summarizes the pastimes of Krishna and shows you where this fits in. Basically, after the fight with Banasura and the marriage of Aniruddha, and before Balaram visited Vrindavan, which is chapter 65, this pastime was going on. That's what Pradyumna was doing. We hear a little bit about what Krishna's children... Pradyumna travelled all over the world. And this yajna was performed there. And they say that after this yajna, then, later Balaram then went to Vrindavan. So it's after Aniruddha's birth, and then we have the story of King Riga, which describes how Samba, a couple of Krishna's children, were found a lizard in the well. And then the next chapter is Balaram visits Vrindavan, so it's between there that event there happened.
Did you read all the names of the sons?
I did, yeah. I got up to 19.
Rukmavati was actually Aniruddha's Rukmavati was actually Pradyumna's cousin.
Pradyumna's cousin?
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, Pradyumna is the son of Rukmini.
Yeah.
And Rukmini's brother.
Yeah.
And Rukmini gave or allowed his daughter to marry.
That's right.
Pradyumna.
Yeah.
So that means he married his cousin.
Yeah. So he became his son-in-law and a nephew.
Yeah. Prabhupada actually mentions in the Krishna book that this is frowned upon in the
Vedic. That's right, yeah.
Because there's a mention by the Srimad Bhagavatam that it's irreligious to do that.
It, and
but it's hard to look at because he says this, he mentions it's irreligious to give your enemy charity.
Yeah.
But it's a little hard to work out whether it's irreligious because of that.
Both.
Irreligious because, well, not appropriate. Because there's also a quotation in where it's against the Dharma. Yeah. I just want to look it up. I was just thinking about yesterday. Rukmavati was coming from another lineage. Her mother was of a different lineage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Pradyumna is coming from Rukmini. So actually, I think it is allowed, even legally it is allowed, even today.
Okay.
Marriage between cousins is actually allowed.
It's all in you.
I see.
I know of cousins who have been married in that relationship. If the girl was coming from the same matriarchal lineage,
right,
it wouldn't be allowed.
Right, I see.
But because she's coming from a different
lineage,
matriarchal
line,
it's sort of considered okay. Yeah. It's borderline. But then Rukmi allowed the granddaughter to marry Mammon. That's a bit hard of us.
That the closeness of the relatives there can be borderline irreligious, right?
Yeah. Mm. So, what verse did you get up to?
I read verse 19.
Which is the last of
that is. Yeah, it basically verse 18 described a couple of the main sons of Rohini, who's the head of the 16,108 queens, and then it describes how Prajumna fathered Aniruddha in the womb of Rukmavati, and then text 19 describes that. My dear king, the sons and grandsons of Lord Krishna's children numbered in the tens of millions. 16,000 mothers gave rise to this dynasty. So basically just that section there describing the sons, later on describes a little bit about the daughters, that each of the 16,108 wives each had one daughter as well. And of course Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book that if you take the wives, the sons, his grandsons like that, and great grandsons, you get to about a billion, nearly a billion relatives.
Big family.
Big family. Yeah.
When it says that the sons are the same, what's the words that
are used? Qualities. Well, Prabhupada mentions in the Srimad Bhagavatam it says that none of them were less than their father.
That's right.
Right? And Prabhupada says each of them had the same equal in qualities. And in one place, Srila Prabhupada actually says they were equal in, and then he mentions the six opulence of wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge of renunciation. In one place he mentions that they were equal in those six opulences.
So that means they were immensely powerful.
Yeah. None of them were
less.
Yeah. That's interesting, in this pastime here that we just read with Prajumna, all the personalities that Krishna has yet to kill and defeat, Prajumna, pretty much approached them and was about to kill them, like Sisapal and Dantavakra and what have you. People intervened so that he didn't, but it's sort of he was ready to kill them. He was could have saved his father the trip, except at some stages, in order to glorify Krishna, Prajumna did get himself into trouble, I think with Lord Shiva. And Lord Krishna actually had to appear on the scene and sort things out a little bit. Yeah, that's the Garga Samhita. Yeah, Narada Muni. He said to Garga Muni that previously I spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to Vyasadeva, and he said that I would like you to just elaborate on some of the pastimes, in here. And I was explaining that, in Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura's commentary to the first verse of the 55th chapter of 10th canto, he says that many of the Nitya Siddha devotees of Lord Krishna, they appeared, but they don't appear and expand their own glories, they appear and expand Krishna's glories. And therefore, for instance, we generally understand Prajumna, his fame as being Kamadev. So in that way, it's his famous as being Krishna's opulence, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, of progenitors, I am Kamadev. Sambha is considered an incarnation of Kartikeya, and of course he's another, amongst generals, I am Kartikeya. So in this way, many Nitya Siddha devotees who, share the opulence of the spiritual world of Krishna, but they appear in Krishna's pastimes to expand Krishna's glories, so they appear as one of his opulences. And, therefore, many of the stories which may detract from that theme of the Srimad Bhagavatam are sort of separated a little bit, like that.
And
for other reasons,
So who translated that?
That one was by Kusakrath and Purna Pragyadas. it's divided into three sections. pastimes on Vrindavan, Mathura and Dwarka. And it does, you know, for instance, it tells you who King Ugrasena was in his previous life, who Kamsa was in his previous life, and you know, yeah, you know how in the when we heard about the gopis that many of them appeared from different places, so it describes all the different places that they appeared from, you know, and things like that. So yeah, there's a huge amount of background information, which is really good. Yeah, so I've sort of been following that with that, but. Having read that, I knew that it's that pastime slotted right in here, and because we were discussing Krishna's children, and particularly Pradyumna, who's the foremost, I thought we might just get that in there. So, all glory to Prabhupada.